Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 31, and I am Livia, your host. And this week we have a brand new guest.
Hi, I'm Amy. I'm from Burbank. And I am doing the Twitter and the Facebook for TV Campfire.
And we really, really appreciate it.
And I got myself here in Los Angeles. It's Peter.
I was about to say, and who are you? That was a backwards introduction, but I appreciate it. Mix it up a little bit. All right, and this week in the news, we have more casualties for the second week of new series. Outlaw, starring Jimmy Smits, which I checked out and I think I reported on in one of the podcasts, is not doing very well. It has been put on production hold, and they basically said that it's not technically canceled, but if the ratings don't go up, it will be officially canceled. And this Friday, the ratings basically stayed the same, which is very low, so don't hold your breath. It looks like Outlaw's gone. And I actually, I'm not crying about that because I got to the point where I got to the third episode and I stopped it about 15 minutes in because it was just awful. The pilot was the best episode, and after that, the rest of them sucked. So I'm not crying about that cancellation. All right, the next piece of news I have is actually that I went to the big Caprica event they had at Universal City. And I heard about it. It was very last minute. They put it together the last minute. They sent out invitations, and strangely, some people got a yes to the invitation, and some people didn't get a response. It was really bizarre. Like, half the people I know got in, and half the people didn't. And then when I got to the event, it was half empty. So that was a little strange. But what was very cool about it is, unlike any other kind of convention or anything like that, once we got in, instead of just kind of sitting us down and having the actors and the writers and producers separate, they had this like bar, and everybody was hanging out at the bar, so you could talk to anybody. They had 45 minutes from when you came in to the premiere starting to where you could just kind of hobnob with everybody.
I've been to an event like that. Those are really cool.
Yeah, it was great. I basically talked to everybody I wanted to talk to. But the highlight of my evening was talking to Jane Espenson.
Espenson.
I have the most difficulty pronouncing her last name ever. I should just like have it ringing in my ears to make sure I say it right. But that was definitely the highlight. I walked up to her and told her, you know, I was really excited she was going to do Torchwood. And somebody mentioned, oh yeah, she's doing the sixth episode of Game of Thrones, which premieres on HBO. And I was really excited about that show because I've read the books. And so we had this awesome geek moment where she's read the books and she's writing the show, and I've read the first book. So we were just talking about the book and what the most moving thing was, the most startling thing was. And she was totally just telling me everything that happened, mainly because it's from the book. So it's not like there's spoilers.
Right.
So it was pretty good. I mean, we were saying specific characters that we liked, and we just had a really great time for about 5 or 10 minutes. And I was ecstatic. I was very happy because I've run into her on several occasions but never really gotten a chance to talk to her. I think I've said something like, hey, you're cool. Oh, I love your writing. And then that's about it. This is the first time I actually got to talk to her.
Gotta love those geek out moments with the creators.
Yes, it was fantastic. And then I talked to a couple of the Battlestar Galactica writers, but they're all mad because some of them are not on Caprica. Because there was such a long break between Battlestar and when Caprica started up that they had to get other jobs. And so they're mad about the other jobs that they're on and that they're not on Caprica. So that was kind of interesting. It also explains to me why some of the writing is different because some of the Battlestar writers aren't there. So that explains that. But I got to see the premiere of the second half of the first season before everybody else, which was really cool. Do you guys have any news?
Well, I work in downtown LA, in one of those high rises in the financial district, and there's been a lot of filming around there lately, and I asked what it was, because, you know, you just walk by somebody with a clipboard, they might actually just tell you. and I found out that they've been filming Castle down there. Now, I don't know what episode, but I saw the trucks and everything. That was pretty cool. And then a few weeks ago, I saw some pretty cool action going on. They were filming The Closer, and somebody told me it was season 7, episode 6, I believe.
Season 7, episode 6.
Yeah.
I don't know what season we're on.
I think we're on season 6.
Oh, so they're ahead. Okay.
Yeah. So, can I say what the action was that I saw? Or?
Well, that's technically spoilers.
Okay, no spoilers then.
Right. All right. Peter, do you have any news?
Nothing, but I did want to say that that when you're talking about cancellations, I saw that show My Generation, which got canceled.
Oh.
Terrible. Like, F. It was so, like, it was so bad. It was, I don't know if listeners out there have seen Cloverfield. I like Cloverfield. Libya does not like Cloverfield. But even though I like Cloverfield, the fun of that movie is that it's, you know, it's a handy cam, it's a documentary style, and it's supposed to be a monster. So even though the characters are one-dimensional, you're like, oh, who cares? It's really more for the ride. So imagine no monster, but the same documentary style and the same one-dimensional characters. It was so, the characters were so, I couldn't believe how, like, cheesy soap opera they were. It was terrible. Like, it might actually be an F. Like,
wow.
It was so bad. Like, Lone Star got canceled, and I thought Lone Star was actually, I thought it was a good pilot. I was like, oh, this is actually pretty good, but no one watched it, so it's canceled. Like,
after
My Generation, I can't believe they aired it. It was just terrible.
Well, Fox is quick on cancellation. We already know that. So, except strangely, I'm really glad that they haven't canceled The Good Guys yet. And I think mainly that's because they don't have anything else at the moment. The second they get another program, they're going to replace The Good Guys, which makes me sad. But the ratings are really low. I mean, I can't blame them. But also, part of the problem is they premiered The Good Guys in the summer. So the people who were exposed to it from the beginning are not, it's not a big audience. And so that small audience carried over into the regular season. So it's getting pretty low ratings. So I expect it to be canceled by mid-season, unfortunately. I love that show. And I love that mustache. Anyway. Now we're going to go onto the shows. First show up is, we talked about Dexter's premiere last week, and this week is the second episode, and it was still very much kind of like, more like part two of the premiere than a brand new episode, because it was still dealing with everything that Dexter was dealing with in the premiere. Like, Peter, you know how, like, the, premiere ended?
Yes. Well, as I recall, it ended, he shows up at the funeral, right?
Right, like the whole thing, it ends with the funeral, but the big tension was that the FBI suspect him of killing...
Oh, that's right, he blew it off.
Right, and he basically ran out of town, and so now he's on the hook for that, and also, I think you mentioned that you found the whole teenage daughter hating Dexter thing kind of tiresome but understanding, right?
Yeah, I mean, I totally understood it. I rolled my eyes a little, even though I understand.
Yeah, and this week they kind of resolved all that. Probably not. I mean, I understood why they did it. It kind of makes me sad a little bit. But basically, the FBI thing, he went in for the interview. He played it cool. He had his head back together. And he knew he didn't kill Rita. But the tension that they actually have added, which is interesting, is that, remember that false name that Dexter gave the trio killer? What is his name? The Trinity killer.
John Lithgow.
Yeah, the false name he gave that guy, and he went that and the Trinity killer went around killing people with the name.
Right. Okay. Go ahead.
But I don't remember what the name is.
I don't remember either.
They now have interviewed the family, and so they're looking for that guy who's actually Dexter. Because their question to Dexter was, why would the Trinity Killer target your wife? And he's like, he's a serial killer, who knows, he's crazy. But now they asked each of the three family members to give a composite of basically Dexter, and all three of them gave a different description. But of course, the goofy cop, I call him the goofy cop because I hate him a lot, the cop that's Deb's partner, he took the composites.
Quinn?
Yeah. He took the composites and put them together, and now it kind of looks like Dexter. But he hasn't figured that out yet. He just knows that he's trying to mix and match the composites so that they look like someone.
Interesting.
And
did they introduce Julia Stiles or RoboCop, Peter Weller?
No. Like I said, this was really part two of the first episode. So it's all about, you know, his emotional, where he's feeling he is right now. And the main thrust of the episode is really all of them are living at the small apartment. So it's the two kids plus Dexter plus the sister plus the baby in a one-bedroom apartment, which is insane. And the girl had another fit. And this time the fit manifested itself in her saying she doesn't want to stay with Dexter anymore. She wants to go with her grandparents. And the brother wants to stay with Dexter, but Dexter's like, you can't leave your sister. Your sister needs you, blah, blah, blah. So basically they've packed off the two older kids. So
now that's kind of what I was thinking before we even saw the premiere, was I was like, I wonder if they'll just live with their grandparents.
Yeah, and I'm kind of sad about it because I did sort of, especially the boy, I really did like them, but there's no way Dexter can be a cop, kill people, and take care of three children. Like, that wasn't...
Wait, so wait, what happened to the baby?
He's keeping the baby. So
okay,
Dexter...
So Harry is with him.
Yes, so Dexter has the baby, but the other two kids have been packed off, and that was pretty much what this whole episode was about, was resolution of that. Nothing major actually happened as far, and the only thing they did, like I said, is now they have the tension of they're looking for Dexter's fake identity. And so that's the big, oh, are they going to catch him kind of deal. And I'm sure the next episode will be what you're waiting for, which is the introduction of the new big bad or the big villain.
Right. Well, it's just because the poster of it is, like the ads was Dexter, and then Julia Stiles is on the slab, like he's about to kill her. And then in clips we've seen that it looks like Peter Weller, maybe he's a former cop or FBI guy. Like, and you're right, and they also look like there's some serial killer who like maybe decapitates people and slits their mouth or something. So it looks like there's three or four things that they need to get going with.
Yeah, and I feel like next week they will, but they really, I thought that they did a good job of concluding everything that happened in the finale. So
it
now
sounds like what you're saying, it sounds like the second episode, maybe that should have just been a 2-hour premiere. They should have just put the two together.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like one big 2-hour episode to resolve all that, and then the next thing would be starting the new story.
I agree, and that's kind of what it felt like they should have done, but yeah, they didn't. So there you go. All right, so the next show we're going to move on to is House. And
so is 13 gone now for a while?
13 is definitely gone. And the preview for next week is they hire a new female
Which
doctor.
Is Joan of Arcadia.
Actually, it's not, which means she's probably going to fail. Like, the woman that they hire is totally going to fail out, and they're probably going to get Joan of Arcadia.
Right, because Amber Tamblyn, I think she joined the cast, right?
So
you're saying it looks like next week is the whole trying to find a replacement, and then that girl's not going to work out.
Right, well, because this week it was more about they realized they needed a female doctor, one for perspective, and one of their patients specifically asked for a female, and so House had to get Cuddy to do it. So Cuddy basically said, you have 1 week to find a female doctor, because I'm not doing this again. So that sets it up.
But, well, we know that Olivia Wilde is coming back because, I mean, if anybody goes to Hulu or whatever, there was like a behind the scenes with Olivia Wilde, and she is on the set. Actually, I get to say Olivia Wilde, at least her on-camera presence, not as 13. She's actually a lot more laid back and kind of funny than I was expecting, just because basing on what 13 is like. And she was behind the scenes, and she definitely says, oh, 13 is going to be gone for a little while. It's definitely not. It's not like, Jennifer Morrison was Cameron, right? Like, she's gone.
Right. Yeah, she is.
So it's definitely not like that. It's definitely more like, for whatever reason, I don't know if she's shooting. I mean, we know she already shot Tron, so I don't know if there's some other movie she's shooting or something. But she's probably, I would bet she's gone for probably what, half the season, like 10 episodes,
something like that. I'm not sure, and it'll be interesting to have two women because I'm assuming they're not going to fire.
Right.
The other woman, when 13 comes back, that'll be interesting to have two women. That's not Cameron, because Cameron we're so used to, and 13, as long as she's been on the show, I'm still not exactly adjusted to her yet. So anyway, I think it would be interesting. This week's episode was pretty interesting too, because it was basically making fun of the Twilight books. It was basically like it's a writer who writes these tween books about this kid who has this girlfriend, which one is he going to choose? There's like camp whatever versus camp whatever. And they're totally snarking on Twilight. But the funny thing is that House is the fan. So he's been reading all the books, and the author tries to kill herself as soon as she finishes the last book. And he wants to know what happens. And so he does the whole, he gets her the reel from her typewriter and meticulously tries to put it back together. He has like 5 attempts, and then finally he uses some crazy technology to put it back together so that he can read the book. And then he, of course, is mad because she actually leaves it on a cliffhanger. And he was like, you leave the book on a cliffhanger and then you try to kill yourself? He's like, what kind of person are you? So he's very affronted by that.
That's pretty funny.
But the other good thing is it moves the House and Cuddy relationship forward a little more too, because they're basically, he's freaking out again about when Cuddy is going to break up with him, and he's doing all these crazy things to prevent it, which actually does the reverse. And then Wilson's, of course, like, dude, just talk to her. And he's like, oh, I can't do that. And then, of course, at the end of the episode, Cuddy's like, would you just freaking talk to me and tell me when we have a problem? But the good thing that she said to him, which I found interesting, was she was like, we don't have to have everything in common, but the reason that I'm with you is that you make me better. And she's like, and I like to think that I make you better. And because he was freaking out about the fact that they have nothing in common. They don't like to do anything together. And she was like, that's not, you know, the big thing. But it all came down to this moment at the very end when House was about to be his jerk self. Like, he had stopped this woman from trying to kill herself. He had figured out how to give her something to live for because he wanted her to write the book. And then he finds out that she's like, okay, now that you've given me something to live for, I don't need to write these books anymore. And he's like, what? And so he was totally about to say something to her that would have ruined all the work that he had done to give her something to live for. And he saw Cuddy standing behind him, and he didn't do it because he didn't want her to see him be that mean. So basically it shows she makes him better, a better person. So that was all pretty good. I liked it. I'm sure we're going to fall out of the honeymoon phase of that relationship, and it's going to get dark and ugly, but I'm enjoying it while it's lasting. How about that?
Cool.
The next show we're going to talk about, Amy.
The Event.
Like, the name of the show is called Amy. No, it's called The Event, and this is your first show. Go for it. Tell us what you thought.
Okay. Well, I've heard the ad campaign saying that it's like a combination. Oh, it's like Lost meets 24.
Yeah. And so did it fit to that description for you?
No, I think that in some ways it's trying too hard to be like Lost in 24. Oh, and also Heroes. But actually, I enjoyed this week's episode more than I did the second episode.
I would say actually what's weird is The Event has progressively been getting better. Like, I thought the pilot was trash. I thought the second episode was a definite improvement. And I actually liked the third episode.
I thought not that much seemed to happen in the second episode, but I felt like, yeah, definitely the plot and everything, the action's moving along in the third episode.
Well, I like the big, when they finally have revealed that, okay, these guys are aliens, and now you know and understand that they are aliens, then it all just kind of, it brings more to the mystery, and it makes it way more interesting.
Do you think it matters what kind of aliens they are?
Well, I mean,
just aliens that happen to look exactly like humans, but just have longer lifespans.
Yes, it's just like the doctor says, you look Time Lord to me. So,
Because that happens.
It does.
We don't
know. I don't know. I don't know if I care. Because we're not going to probably go to their home planet. I don't know if it matters. Like, they can make up. It does. At this point, I don't think it matters. What does matter is finding out more about them themselves. Like, some of them seem to have powers. Some of them seem to don't have powers.
Have we seen those powers?
Well, we saw the big light.
Oh, that.
Yeah, that moved the whole plane. So is that a piece of technology that they have, or did somebody move it with their mind?
And like, why did they move it?
Well, they wanted
to keep it from crashing.
Well, it would have killed the woman.
So confusing.
They didn't really. I don't think they cared about the president dying. They cared about her. She's their leader.
Oh, yeah, she was there.
She was standing right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was more to save her life than anybody else's.
But then what I'm confused about is who was... Do we know who's behind the plot to crash it in the first place? And who's holding his girlfriend?
Yes, there's obviously some secret, I put in parentheses, secret organization that wants the president dead because he was going to let those guys out. Like, everybody kept saying, don't let him out, bad consequences, don't let him out. But what I think is really obvious is in the pilot, there were two people that were missing. Like, he was like, oh, find me my chief of staff. Or the vice president. No, it was the vice president. They were like, where's the vice president? Oh, he left an hour ago. Because he freaking knew that the plane was going to come down. That was like...
Because he is one of them, you think?
Well, no, I don't think he's one of them.
That would be cool, though.
No, I don't think it'd be vice president. I don't think so. I mean, but that wouldn't explain. That would make no sense. Why would he try to kill her? And they do want to get out. So why would they stop themselves from getting out? That wouldn't make sense. But what I thought was obvious is there were two people who were missing that were supposed to be at that meeting, and they mysteriously disappeared right before that plane was supposed to crash. So if I'm looking for who's trying to kill me, those are the first two people I go to. I'm like, well, why did you leave early? You know,
so they're off hiding somewhere.
Well, we don't know I doubt the vice president's actually hiding, but no, everyone's like, oh, I wonder who tried to kill the president. And no one's questioning the two people who disappeared, which I think is sloppy to me. But I like... in this week's episode, I liked how the president was like, well, you guys have been locked up for 60 years. One of you will talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy that tries to talk gets killed by his girlfriend with a piece of a shard of glass, no less.
I thought that was pretty tragic. I mean, how many years had he been waiting to see her? Or wait, had they been... They'd been in the prison together.
They'd been in the prison together, but he really was selfish. And he was just like, it's just about me and you. And she's looking at the big picture. She's like, no, it's about all of us. Because her thing was, if they tell... Because remember the leader woman? I don't know her name. But she said...
Sophia,
right. She said, if they knew the whole truth, we would be dead. So that's assuming that if he got to talk and told them everything, they would kill all of them. So the girlfriend was kind of like... Either I kill my boyfriend or all my people get killed. So I understood why she did it.
Yeah.
But...
It sucks for him.
It sucks for him. And it sucks because my thing is he didn't... I don't think he knew her as well as he thought. Because if he did, he would have understood that she wasn't the kind of person that would let all her people be killed just for the two of them. You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know why he was so surprised, but...
That's a little incongruous there.
Right. I mean, they've been dating for 60 years.
Yeah, 60 years.
That might have come up, you know, but anyway, I did think that this episode was way better. On the rating side, the show has been doing the inverse of the quality of the show. So, like, the pilot did really well, and the ratings have steadily gone down. But that's consistent with what I've talked to people. Like, most people I talked to hated the pilot, and they said they'd never watch it again. And then some people, when they saw the second episode, they were like, it's a little better, but still not worth my time. I think that The Event is a kind of show that it looks like it's getting better as it goes along, but I think it might have screwed itself, where by the time it gets really good, no one's watching it anymore.
Like Dollhouse.
Yes, Dollhouse got fantastic at the end, and no one was watching. So,
except for the major Whedon fans.
Exactly.
Oh. Well.
Actually, I think Dollhouse come on DVD and Blu-ray Tuesday?
Yes.
I think it does. So for anybody that wants to catch up, there you go.
Nice plug. Very good. Yes. Very timely.
I think I posted
and
that on
I'm
my...
out.
No, no, I was going to say, now we're on No Ordinary Family. But what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I think I posted that Dollhouse is coming out on DVD on Tuesday on the Twitter.
Yay.
See? There you go.
You told me that you just watched No Ordinary Family.
I watched the pilot of No Ordinary Family, which is for free at iTunes and PlayStation and Xbox. You know, it's anywhere you can get it. It's pretty much free. And I was digging it until they got to the teenage daughter. And I was like, again with the annoying teenage daughter. but I liked it enough. Like I would agree. I don't know if this is something that you discussed on the last podcast, but like you had told me personally, you had said that you felt that the show, because I think it's an ABC Family, right?
No, it's ABC.
Or ABC, sorry, ABC. And I think what's weird is it does feel kind of like this light family show that where they have to have these superpowers. But then when you get to the bad guy and like what he's doing, it's really violent. And I have no problem with violence, but it feels, the tone felt weird. I was like, well, this feels like gritty drama, not like, you know, light, fun family. So I wasn't sure about that. And then yeah, I just got a little tired of the teenage daughter. But overall, I thought it was an okay pilot. Like, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't terrible or anything. And obviously, I like the two. I like Chiklis and, is it Julie Benz? Is that
yes,
his last name?
Yes.
Yeah, I like them. Darla. So, you know.
Well, I checked out the second episode because everybody told me last week in the podcast that I was crazy, that I should have loved the pilot for No Ordinary Family.
What?
And they all loved it, and I didn't. I thought it was all the reasons that you just gave were my problems. I was like, the tone is very uneven, and I had a problem with the dialogue as well. But everybody else was loving it, and it was getting really good ratings, and they gave it. They were saying that this is like the big family show everybody's watching. I was like, really? So I said, okay, fine. So I watched the second episode, and it has the exact same problems as the pilot, which is, it starts off as a fluffy family thing, and he and his wife are making deals about whether they're going to use their powers or not. They need to find out what the powers mean. And actually, the wife thought of something smart, because she's a scientist. She was like, for all we know, these powers are using up all the energy in our bodies and could kill us. And I was like, that's valid. And so she was like, let's not use our powers until we understand them. And she got a water sample from that river that they fell into. And she's like, all right, I'm going to examine it, figure out, you know, what is the cause and see how it affects us, do a genetic makeup, blah, 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 blah. So she was going to science it to death. And they did all the research and found out that the water wasn't it at all. There's something else that caused them to get the powers. And they actually had Michael Chiklis had some fun stopping some bank robbers, and he and the woman cop, she noticed he was at a couple of crime scenes again, and this time she warned him, and she was like, next time I see you at a crime scene, I'm going to arrest you. And then he reveals his power to her, right? And he's like, there are other people out there with powers, and eventually you're going to need me. And so he's like, come and get me when you do need me. And I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting. Like, I was just getting excited about the concept of her running into some bad guys that she couldn't handle and having to go to him and them working together. I thought that would be great. But, of course, then it went to the dark side again with the big bad villain. And they realized that in the pilot, she killed that guy that could teleport, right? Remember that?
Oh, right.
Right?
Yes.
And so they went to her to see if she knew that he had that power since she killed him. And so they send somebody who has telekinesis against her, and they basically hold her hostage and hold her up or whatever. And at the end of the episode, they freaking kill her. And I was like, what? They introduce her for two episodes, get her to have a relationship with Michael Chiklis' character. It looks like it's going to be pretty cool. And then you shoot her in the head. And so the tone of that versus, oh dear, you ate all the muffins because your metabolism is so fast. Like, it felt like two different shows. So yeah, I still don't like it. So if you guys have a different opinion, please, you know, let me know. I still think that's, you can't have a show where the tone is so different that you don't know what you're watching.
I agree.
Next show up is Glee.
Glee!
All right, this week's episode was actually a Kurt-heavy episode, which are usually my favorite. So what'd you think?
Okay, first I have to admit that I haven't been watching it regularly, and I really should have because, oh my god, I loved it. Kurt, that actor, the emotion on his face and his acting and his singing and everything. I was crying a couple of times.
Watching. You and me both.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Oh.
Okay, Amy is crying now. No.
I can't get over it. When he was singing, "I Want to Hold Your Hand."
Oh, yeah. That was just really good.
And also when, what's her name? Took him to the church.
Not Rachel. Mercedes.
Mercedes took him to the church. And they were all singing Bridge Over Troubled Water. Ah.
Well, and I liked his touching. I liked his fabulous hat as well. Yeah.
And I have to say something about the grilled cheeses.
That was the grilled cheeses?
That's the first appearance of that, right?
Yes, that is the first appearance.
And the last.
Yes, because he then ate it at the end.
Yeah, I thought, are you really going to eat that old cold sandwich?
Well, I thought he was going to throw it away, but apparently not. He had to make sure it was destroyed for the safety of all humanity. But
in the best way possible.
Right. I also was surprised at how selfish his wishes were.
Yeah, they were really selfish.
Yeah, it was like you have a best friend and a guy that you said is like a father to you, and he's in a coma, and your request is to touch some girl's boobs. Really?
Well, he's in high school. Right?
I understand that. But still, he's like, this guy's like my father. Okay.
He didn't pray once for him to get better.
No, not at all.
I didn't even think of that. So it's good.
I will say I thought that too. But they did. They noted that because the Mohawk guy said like, "Oh, I've been praying for Kurt's dad. What were you praying for?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, same thing." So that made me think that they were aware of it. You know, that it's more like he's being really selfish. He just wants to touch Rachel's boob and he wants to win the game. But I mean, he feels really screwed up about it at the end.
Yeah, I know. I know teenagers can be self-centered, but when somebody like a father figure is hurt, that's kind of when they kind of have their reality check.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I thought it was odd that he was still being selfish in the middle of that. But
no, I would agree. I also would say that while I did like the Beatle version of the Kurt version of the Beatles, "I Want to Hold Your Hand," I didn't really like what was the Mercedes song? It was "Bridge Over Troubled Water."
Right.
That was okay. I actually thought that it was a good Glee episode for character. Like, I really like Kurt, and I did think the Jesus was funny. But the actual songs, the only real moment for me was the end I thought was good, and then the beginning when the Mohawk guy was like, doing the Billy Joel song about Only the Good Die Young. I thought that was good, but I actually thought for as many pop cult popular songs about religion and stuff as there are, I actually thought most of their choices were a little weak.
Actually, sorry, I disagree, because the Yentl song, the character is
Rachel,
sorry. Yentl song, I thought that was pulled off very, very well. Although... Well, I it was kind of jarring how they went from the transition of they're sitting by the lake, and then all of a sudden they're in the emergency, or not the hospital room.
Glee does that, though. Oh, especially okay. During music songs. Whenever, if someone's in the middle of a song, they can magically teleport themselves to different places.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. It's just, the song seemed more fitting for, like, a two-person personal sort of song by the lake.
I thought the use of the Yentl song was an interesting choice because, you know, pop culture wise, Barbara Streisand is pretty considered kind of lame in today's world. So I actually think that's brave of them to use something for a Yentl thing.
Except for Rachel. Like, Rachel thinks Barbara Streisand is her hero.
Oh, no, no, no. And I thought that they figured out a way to do it. I still just didn't find it that good. I mean, they could have used, like, the song that I really thought they could have done, they could have either done the Hare Krishna song, the George Harrison one. I thought that song is fantastic, and it would have been a nice variety. Or they could have done the Spirit in the Sky, which is actually kind of a fun, rocky type of song. I was just surprised that in the middle, I really felt like the Yentl song, the song at the Bridge Over Troubled Water, and I think there's one other song, they felt like... similar types of ballads. Like, they're all about building. It's all like, kind of start slow, and then there's like, whoa, big crazy building. I kind of felt like, that's why I liked the Billy Joel song in the beginning. I was like, oh, this is kind of a fresh way to start. This is not what you think you do. Same thing with the Beatles song. I was like, oh, this is not the way I would think you would do a Beatles song. But the other ones, I just was just kind of like, yeah, this is almost, these could just be Mariah Carey versions or something. They just feel overproduced and like big, which for me personally just didn't move me. However, I will say, getting out of the song thing, we haven't brought this up yet. I also loved all the Sue Sylvester stuff.
Oh, right. Yeah. With her sister and stuff, so. Yeah.
Reminded me of another friend of mine who takes very good care of her sister with Down syndrome.
That's the surprising side of Sue that I think that they really managed to give her depth. Like, her seeing her take care of her sister really adds a different layer and an interesting layer to Sue.
But then didn't she still beat her at checkers?
Oh, no, she let her sister win. Remember?
Oh, right. She goes, "I win," and then she's like, "Ah, that's not true," or something. Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah.
But I thought that was pretty funny.
I also wanted to say that the kid playing Little Kurt in the flashbacks looked
I was like, where'd they get that kid?
Yeah, that was weird. Yeah, he really looked like him.
Exactly.
Right.
And I went on IMDb, and I saw a picture of the two of them together, and they really looked like Mini-Me. It's amazing.
I think I saw that same picture, yeah.
Yeah, and then he did the little hairbrush thing, too. I was like, whoa, where did they find... Is that his brother, really? Or that's just some actor that they found that just looks like him?
It just looks like him.
Wow.
Doesn't have the same last name or anything.
That's freaky. It's like your parents have been playing around, you just don't know about it. Alright, let's move on to Caprica! And this is the part where I'm a little excited, because last season, when Caprica ended, I was like, I don't know, man. Like, I was really excited about Caprica when it first started, but then the first half of first season sort of let me down. Like, nothing was moving, especially at the beginning. But I'd have to say towards the end of the first half, like in the last few episodes, stuff started to crank and started to happen. But I still was kind of not sure how I felt about the show. I have to say the premiere of the second half of first season really kicked it off very well. Of course, James Marsters, who is always awesome, was very awesome here as well. He basically is... He's got all these teenagers that he's teaching how to slit their hands and give blood to the one true God and sacrifice and be willing to blow themselves up, and he's teaching them all about that. So that sounds productive. But the main thing that I thought was really interesting was what's going on with Greystone. That at some point, I think I missed it, he lost his company to Tomas, which we knew that was gonna happen, but I don't remember it exactly happening in the finale. And then, but now it starts off the episode, his wife's jumped off the bridge and his company's gone, and he's just sitting on the couch growing a beard, being all like, my life sucks. But what's interesting is, instead of just moping, he's decided that he's gonna make a deal with the Toran gangsters. So he goes and he meets with the Adamas and the... I forgot the name of the Toran gang that they're part of. And he makes a deal in that if they can get Tomas out of business and let him take his company back over, then they will have partial ownership of the company as well, which is crazy. Which is absolutely crazy. Joseph Adama basically told him he was crazy to do it, because he's like, once the mafia or whatever gets a hold of your company, they're just going to break it up into parts and sell it. And he's like, yeah, but I think I can convince them that the company is better as a whole without selling it off into pieces. And then they tried to also warn him on how dark it could be to be their partners, because they were like, if you screw us, the first thing we're going to do is kill your mother. And they basically were like, we have all this information on her. We put a bomb in her car. We did all this other stuff. So they were like, be sure you want to deal with us before you sign on the dotted line or whatever. So that was all like very cool. And the stuff that was happening on Geminon was also pretty interesting. Peter, do you remember the woman that was like the headmaster at the kids' school? Do you remember her?
Yeah, she's a big actress. I forgot what her name is, but yes, I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Right, and then last season she made friends with the wife, and she's, you know,
right,
now
which actually was one of my least favorite parts of the season.
Oh, I agree. And now you know that she's a head member of the STO. She basically goes back to Geminon, and she's trying to, because she's fighting with James Marster's character, because they're trying, they're basically trying to kill each other and say which one of them has the power over the STO on Caprica. And so she's trying to get permission from the head holy mother or whatever to take over. But the guy that's like second in command sees that her ambition is getting better than her, and he basically recommends that she be assassinated. So, but what's kind of interesting is the whole assassination attempt goes sideways, and he ends up getting killed because the people that he asks to assassinate her are actually loyal to her. And so that goes sideways, and he gets killed. And so the Holy Mother, whatever her name is, she was like, she sees which way the wind's blowing, and she's like, oh yeah, you're totally in charge of the STO. You can have anything you want. So now, that leads me to believe that James Marshall is not going to be for this world very much longer, because I think her first order of business is to kill him. But we haven't seen that happen yet. But I mean, all that stuff is all, everything is moving. Also, the big thing is when Chloe's Cylon body, when it got destroyed in the finale, remember their whole big deal was they couldn't copy it because she was sentient. But now that she's damaged, it allowed them to make copies. And so they made thousands of copies and put them in thousands of Cylons. So now there are actually thousands of Cylons with copies of her in them. But it's not her consciousness, because her consciousness now is in virtual world. But it's like an after image of her consciousness, which lets you understand why the Cylons believe in the one true God. And the previews for the rest of the season look awesome, because it looks like the Cylons start to go on a rampage. At least one or two of them start killing folks. So Caprica, thumbs up. I'm very excited about the new season. All right, Peter, start us off with Modern Family.
Oh, that was great. I'm still a little... this one saved... I mean, I love the first season of Modern Family. I think it's an absolute gem. I have liked this season of Modern Family, but until this episode, near the end, at the end of every Modern Family episode, they'll do this thing where they'll kind of do a montage talking about whatever the theme was, you know, like loyalty or trusting in something or, you know, whatever. In the first season, they would always kind of make fun of that. So it's like they would do it, but then you'd see, oh, well, actually, they're not taking it too seriously. For the first few episodes this season, they actually have been taking it seriously, which to me made me roll my eyes a little. I was just like, really? Like, however, in this episode, they went back to what they did in the first season. Because as I unfortunately, Olivia, did you see it?
Yes. Yes.
Is it something about golf balls at the end? He says something like, we're watching it and you're like, oh, he's being kind of overly sentimental. And then he makes a quick change, but I don't remember what the gag is.
Oh, when he takes the kid, when he takes Manny back to church? Is that what you're talking about?
That, yeah, maybe that's what it is. But then they cut back to Ed O'Neill.
Right.
And he kind of makes a joke about it.
Right. Because he takes the kid back to church because Manny basically skips church because he thinks that Ed O'Neill has the answer to heaven and hell and all of that.
Right. You don't even have to go.
Right.
Which actually, as a side note, a friend of mine who I work with, she Twittered the other day, and she's like, I'm done with Modern Family. And I was like, what? You're done with Modern Family? She really hates Julie Bowen, the mother, and she really hates the Colombian. I forgot. What's the character's name? Is it Gloria?
You've been watching the show way more than me. I don't know anyone's name yet.
I'm really bad character name, but I'm just surprised. Even though those aren't my favorite characters, like... I mean, there's just so much that I really like about that show that I was just like, I can't imagine. The show would have to get so bad for me to not watch it. I think it's so funny.
I think the mom, not the Bolivian mom, but the mom of the other guy, I find her annoying. I find the older sister annoying. I like the younger sister, the bookworm. I like her, but... yeah, I could see why she doesn't like either one of them. I did think that the dad leaving her locked in the bathroom so he could put the bookshelves up was hilarious.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. We needed to say, so the basic thing was the basic premise was that there was it's an earthquake, right?
Right.
The basic thing was an earthquake, so Phil was always supposed to nail down the shelf, and that's one of the things I've always said that I was going to do for my wife, and I never did, so I understood his position on that, like, get that done. And then Mitch and Cam are supposed to go to a friend's house, and the friend, it's like they're almost like costume parties, right?
Right.
And they've just gotten so over the top that they're like, oh, we can use the earthquake as an excuse so we don't have to go. And actually, at the very moment that they were talking about that, I had said to Julia, I was like, you know, they always talk about these parties they go to, but we never actually see who these people are. And sometimes sitcoms do that. Maybe this is one of those things. It's like the gay couple talks about their friend, but we actually never really see the friend. It's more like the story. But of course, that was shattered when Nathan Lane walked in as the, is it Pepper? Is that the character?
Yeah,
name?
That was fantastic, though. He was great.
Oh, yeah, that was good. Yeah, totally. But I was just like, oh, they're actually going to show him and everything.
Yeah, I thought Nathan Lane was a good choice because he's the kind of guy you could imagine having an over-the-top dress-up party.
Well, also, cause, and he's older, so he's like, where they're like, I kind of consider you guys like, and then he's like, sons? He's like, I was going to say brothers, and it makes them all upset. But yeah, no, I thought it was, yeah, I mean, I really like Modern Family. All
right, let's move on to Big Bang.
I thought it was good. I'm still anxious to see if they're going to have Sheldon and Blossom. Sorry, I don't remember what the character's name is. Kiss. Because this episode was all about them coming to a point where he's a physicist. What is she? She's something that's more practical.
Something. It's a neuro. It's a brain thing. It's a neurobiology.
Right, so they get into this kind of theoretical. Well, no, actually, the episode starts with them doing like alternate world questions, and of course, the answers they come to are so like they're just so ridiculous. What is it? It was something like, you know, if a rhinoceros is a domesticated pet, how does that change like the world order or something like that?
Yeah, and then Uganda rules the world.
Right. So later, they're at the Cheesecake Factory with Penny, and you know, with the gang and Penny's waitress. And they, is that when they come to their, no, I think that's just the date, but when do they come to their big fight?
Oh, they have the fight at the house. No, it was at lunch. School. It was at the school, at the university. And she basically says, because his science is theoretical, it's not as important as hers because hers is applied and practical.
Correct. And so they decide to break up. And then, Laurie Metcalf, who plays Sheldon's big religious mother, ends up coming to town because Leonard gets her. Because
Sheldon goes nuts.
That was the best. What?
Because Sheldon goes nuts and buys a million cats.
Right, he buys a million cats. Like 25 of them? Wait, what does he say? This one's Zazzy. This one's Zazzy or something.
He buys the cats for the entire Manhattan Project. He names all the cats after the different scientists.
Except for the Zazzy one.
Right. Yeah, it gets to be insane, but it shows that Sheldon actually does miss the girl and actually misses her company and is lonely. But considering what he talked about, the fact of exchanging unhygienic saliva, I really don't think they're going to be kissing anytime soon.
I don't think it's going to be the next episode, but I think it's going to be dealt with this season, that's for sure.
I don't know, man. He was basically...
Yeah, you can't...
He basically freaked out when she tried to remove jelly from his mouth with her thumb.
Right, but then he clearly missed her. I mean, that's the whole... So, I mean, I don't know. I think they have to go down that road. You're right, though. I don't know how long it's going to take, but I think they'll deal with it. All
right. I'm looking at the clock. Let's move a little quicker. Let's go to 30 Rock.
30 Rock.
Yeah.
You guys can go on this one. I saw it. I don't really have too much to say. I thought it was just okay. I mean, I didn't love it or hate it. There wasn't too much to it for me.
The part that sticks in my mind the most is Kenneth trying to get his page job back.
Oh, right. Because he tried to do the whole contest. It was like a weird performance. And he let Jenna coach him, which was obviously a mistake. But...
and she started transferring... She starts turning into her mother.
Right.
And putting him in the position of her.
Right. Which should have set off alarm bells for him, but it is Kenneth, so he doesn't necessarily have alarm bells.
And I like when she said, you've got to get rid of that Goonie accent. And he's like, but the more I try, the it'll get worse.
Well, also, I did like Donaghy trying to deal with the senator. That was pretty interesting because Queen Latifah, she was pretty funny. I liked her. The more I talk like this, the more you have to understand me and listen to me. And I talk like insane, you know. She was doing the whole thing, and I was. She's like, I don't know what I'm talking about now, but it doesn't matter. You're still gonna jump up and clap. So that was pretty good. What was Liz doing? Liz Lemon.
She was trying to make a point. Oh yeah, people kept putting funny names on her door.
Oh no, because it was about Topher. Because yeah. Donaghy made Topher the co-head writer. He was taking credit for stuff that she did, and so she was freaking out about it, mm-hmm. and so was being very neurotic instead of calm, like she said she was going to be. Which, you know, of course, Liz can't be calm.
And she went on the show that was supposed to be a showcase for Topher.
Right. And thoroughly embarrassed herself and made no sense. She looked like an idiot. But that's not unusual for her.
I liked her sticker that said, I met a congresswoman. That
That was like bigger than her chest.
Yeah. And then the little gags they did when she was, when Queen Latifah's congresswoman character was coming through the studio and they removed the recycle bins.
Oh, like, right. It's just like colored in white.
And then one guy came out of the bathroom and Tracy was running after him. I'll kill you, white devil.
With a samurai sword for some reason. Yeah. Oh, it's like your food, you can't eat our food.
Yeah. That was it was for Tracy's show versus.
But it sounded different.
Yeah.
I am a huge fan of Queen Latifah. Like, she can do no wrong, in my opinion. So. That's why I guess I was a little disappointed because she was fine, but I guess I wanted, I guess I felt like they used her fine, but not like great. I didn't think it was like a great role.
Well, it was all right. I mean, I liked the episode. I wouldn't say it was their best episode, but I definitely liked it.
I always laugh. So that's the point.
The next show that we have up is Vampire Diaries, which is a podcast first. We haven't talked about this show. I have hinted that I've been watching it, but I have finally caught up, and I know that I was a big negativity person about this show because I'd only seen the pilot, but it was basically a bunch of, actually, I think I'm going to blame Tom, who was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about how great it was, and I was like, I don't know, but I've been hearing good stuff from all these different people, and finally, I just bit the bullet. And I just watched season one in, like, a week. And Peter was right behind me. I think you were maybe a couple of days behind me on watching the show. And now we've both caught up. So, yay!
The only sad thing is now we have to wait week to week.
Well, I just want to get your opinion real quick overall. What do you think of season one?
I thought it was great. I thought that, I would say anybody going to give it a chance, I would say the first two episodes are kind of bland, the third and fourth are a little better, and then I would say it really starts to come together in the fifth episode, and then pretty much from that point on there really aren't any bad episodes. It's kind of like going back to what I just said about Modern Family. I think all the episodes, and that includes the season two episodes of Vampire Diaries, except for that shaky opening for the first season, it's a very strong show. I mean, it moves. Every episode ends, and you can't wait to see what happens next, which is really cool. And the biggest thing that I really like about the show, but actually, Libya, this is your observation, is that, like, for anybody who's seen the first season of Vampire Diaries, there is a master plan that Damon, which is Ian Somerhalder, who we saw on Lost, he has this big evil master plan. And, you know, I'm no stranger to television, and I know it's a 22 episode season, so I'm figuring the master plan isn't really going to come into play until like episode 18, and then of course it'll take 4 or 5 episodes to wrap it all up. But not so on Vampire Diaries. They deal with like new twists and new developments. Would you say what, every 4 or 5 episodes?
It's right,
like they have something new, which makes it so much fun, you know.
Well, I thought what was great was I had just finished season one, and I think you were on episode 15, and you were telling me what you thought was going to happen in the finale, and I was like, you're totally wrong. Because what's great about the show is they'll propose some conflict, And based on how other shows do it, you figure it's they're going to drag it out, blah, 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 blah. No, they don't drag. It, whatever the conflict is, it takes like two or three episodes, and they deal with it, and then they give you something else. So Damon's master plan gets totally dealt with and resolved by like episode 10. So that was really good. And so then the next couple episodes are dealing with something else entirely, and then that gets resolved in like five episodes, and then you're dealing with something else, and then that gets resolved. And so it's always moving, it's always something new, and you can't exactly, because I know for some shows when they have like a kind of slow start, I try to tell people, okay, well, watch the pilot and then skip to episode whatever. You can't really do that with this show. You kind of have to, there's only like a couple of bad ones. You get through those couple, and then it just takes off.
I mean, all respect to Brian, who is not here to defend his favorite show. But, I mean, compare the first season of, the first two seasons of Supernatural to once the first season of Vampire Diaries, you know, or Fringe, which we're going to talk about in a second, too. Fringe and Supernatural, those shows, their first seasons, man, they spent so much time on these episodic ones where you could basically tell people, you know, you could skip the first whatever, just go to episode 10. You can't, you're right. Vampire Diaries, not really. I mean, it's all, and fortunately, because the show's good, you won't really want to skip because they're all pretty good. Like, they're all, like, interesting. But, I mean, it's all interrelated.
So I was hesitant at first to watch it because, well, I was afraid it was going to be like another Twilight.
No.
No?
Right, which
no.
is what
I'm
we
a big
all,
True Blood
that,
fan.
I mean, if you watch
it's
the
better
pilot,
than True Blood.
It's better than True Blood?
She's asking, is it better than True Blood, Peter?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I don't even know that show anymore. That show's out of my life. Like, Livia, you were saying the one thing, too, like, you know, Suki might do a lot of stupid things. On Vampire Diaries, the main character, which is Elena, she pretty much calls people on stuff all the time. She's
yeah.
always like, wait, what's with that? What's going on with this?
Well,
like,
what impressed me was at the point where she as a character should think of a certain thing, she does. So, like,
yep.
right when the vampire, Stefan, has been hanging around her for, like, two or three episodes, and she's noticed some bizarre things, like his face gets a little weird, and he heals really quick from a wound. Those couple of things happen, and he's like, oh, I'm fine, don't worry about it, blah, blah, blah. And by like the third or fourth episode, she's like, what are you? And I was like, thank you. I was like, it's awesome. You know, and she just straight up was like, what are you? You're obviously not human. What's going on? And the other thing that he's talking about it from an acting perspective, the whole premise of the show is pretty much that Stefan and Damon both were in love with this woman back in 1864.
Catherine.
Catherine. They were both in love with her, and Elena looks exactly like her, which is why Stefan is now trying to date her. And Damon comes back because he wants to screw with him. And there's like this whole history, but you don't know what it is. But what's cool about the show is as you watch season one, they give you flashbacks through the whole season. But it's not till the end of the season that you can actually put all the flashbacks together and get the full picture of what happened.
Clearly, I need to watch this. I've been driving past these billboards every day wondering what's up with the orgy pictures.
Well, I know, and that's the thing that actually bothers me, because that's not what the show's about. It's not
a
threesome.
Not really.
It's not at all.
I think that's them trying to market Twilight and True Blood. Because we will say, even going back to Buffy, traditionally there is a human girl and there are two vampires that like that girl. I mean, that's kind of the structure, but really that's not... That's not exactly Vampire Diaries.
No,
so it's a little misleading.
Well, yeah, and it's basically a love story, really, for especially season one. I'll say season one is Stefan and Elena. That's really what it's about. Damon is just there to screw with stuff. But what's awesome about Damon is he is so evil and he makes absolutely no bones about it. Makes no excuses. Doesn't say, you know, this whole, you know, I'm a tortured soul. Whatever. Nothing. He's just like, I'm a vampire, I'm evil, deal with it. And he's a main character. But what's interesting is by the end of first season, because at the beginning of first season, you're kind of scared of him, you don't like him, you know he's evil, blah, blah, blah. By the end of first season, you actually feel for him. And I think I was a couple episodes ahead of Peter, and I had finished first season. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, what's going on with Damon. And I just feel so bad for him. And Peter's like, what? He's like, how is that possible? He's no. And then he gets to end it for, he's like, oh yeah, I totally feel bad for Damon. So they actually have managed to give, and even in second season, Damon is still evil. He will still kill someone. Like, and what I think is awesome is I can usually tell when someone has said something to Damon's like, oh, he's going to kill him now. You know, so he has very particular triggers and things people say to him that you know will cause him to just go off. And sometimes he'll kill you quickly, and sometimes I'm like, oh, this guy's going to have to kill, you know, on the down low because that's going to draw too much attention. But his, and then the relationship between the brothers, I think, is really interesting. Because the two, in this case, the two vampires are brothers. They are from the same family. They're a couple of years apart, but they both got turned into vampires. And they have this whole sibling rivalry thing going on that stems back to 1864. Like, that's how they started fighting. And what's interesting is what you thought is the reason why they're fighting, by the time they finish all the flashbacks, you realize it's not what you thought. And what I think is amazing about the show is that they can introduce this concept and totally flip it on its head 5 episodes later. And you realize that all the things that they told you were true to a certain extent, but there's this other thing that totally changes your perception entirely. And they just keep doing that. Like, and then this season, they finally introduced another set of characters, and they introduced this conflict, which any other show would have milked for about 5 or 6 episodes, and they deal with it the very next episode. So they're just like, the story just totally just really moves.
Ratings are pretty good?
They're for CW. Yeah. Mm. It's pretty good for the CW, so it's not like in danger. And actually, they said the last 2 weeks of the ratings have been better than they've ever been. But it's not like huge ratings, like NCIS ratings or anything. They're good CW ratings. How about that?
That works.
All right. Oh, real quick. This week's episode, Peter.
It was great. I thought it was... I thought that as much as we've been just talking about how much Vampire Diaries pushes itself forward, I would say that episodes 3 and 4, was this the 5th or 2?
No, yeah, this was the 5th.
This is the 5th one. Episodes 3 and 4, I thought, while good, they felt a little like setup episodes. And I thought this one really started feeling like part one of the payoff, because clearly the trailer for next week looks like it gets even bigger. But I mean, yeah, I mean, it was stuff that I didn't think that was going to get. Once again, stuff that I didn't think that was going to happen, like characters knowing that other characters are vampires. I will say this, in the world of True Blood, you deal with a world where everybody knows that vampires exist. In the world of Vampire Diaries, it's pretty much the normal, which is that, like, oh, you know, some people know about vampires, but your mom might not, or something like that. So in this episode, a major character who's been trusting the vampires and thinks that the characters are human finds out that they're vampires, and they, you know, and they start to deal with it. And it's pretty good. And another character, Caroline, who is a vampire, she really steps up. You know, she's a character that in the first season was, I mean, you'd say, I mean, she wasn't spoiled, but wouldn't you say she was kind of, she was very superficial?
Yeah, she was superficial, bratty. She had one, she basically was the valley girl. I want to get the best girlfriend.
She's like the valley girl wannabe, because she's technically not, her mother's like a cop. She's really not rich.
Right.
So she's more like she wants that life and stuff. But yeah, in this one, her vampire-ness is starting to really come into focus.
Well, I mean, she's only been a vampire for what, like a couple of weeks? So it hasn't been long.
Yeah, not too long. And that was a nice, that's another thing too, the Vampire Diaries does a really good job of like taking the lore of vampires and other supernatural elements, and they have their own twist on them. Like in the very pilot, and I totally thought this was lame, but it worked. You see the main character in the sun. And I was like, how is this guy a daywalker? And they're like, oh, he's a daywalker because he has a magic ring. And I was like, a magic ring? Really? How lazy is your writing that it's a magic ring? And yet, because it is weaved into those, what you're talking about in the flashbacks and stuff, it actually is pretty effective.
And
if you just tell someone it on paper, you'll be like, a magic ring sounds pretty silly, but it works.
But what's cool is that not everybody has the magic ring, so...
Oh, right, of course.
So,
right,
like, especially the younger vampires or the not-connected vampires or the minions, they can't walk in the daylight. They get out of the daylight, they burn up. So I'd say 70% of the vampires that you see on the show can't walk around during the day.
Also, wanted to say that you brought this up. I'm not a big fan of flashbacks in television shows. The only exception is usually Lost, because that is the show. Lost, the structure of Lost is all about flashbacks or flash forwards or whatever. But I will say, Libby is totally right. The way they use the flashbacks to build upon something so that you have a different perspective five episodes later is really good. Like, I normally also, just in general, I mean, I remember seeing Spike and Eric in True Blood and Buffy in, you know, in their old-timey outfits in the 1800s, and I was always like, oh, this is terrible. This just looks so cheesy and everything. But for some reason, it works in Vampire Diaries. Like, probably just because the characters are so...
Well, and also, you pretty much get all the characters. That's the other thing, because Elena looks like Catherine, even though Catherine behaves totally different. So you
right,
have...
the same actress.
Right, right, same actress. So you get Stefan and Damon and Catherine all doing scenes together. So it's, you basically have your whole cast. The problem with the other flashbacks is usually just have one character looking goofy by themselves dealing with all these other people. But, and also...
Right,
the
one with Eric.
Right, and the thing... The thing about Vampire Diaries is the flashbacks are relevant to current day. So whatever you're finding out in the flashback directly affects what's going on in the current story. So
right,
yeah.
And also it's not just for our benefit. It can be for the characters too. Like in the True Blood thing, all that, that's only for our benefit. It's basically, oh, okay, so the king killed Eric's dad and Eric wants revenge. But in Vampire Diaries... not like you said, it's not quite that simple. It's because all the three or four of the characters are in it, it's really also about their perception of the event. And they'll be like, well, 140 years ago you did this to me, and he'll be like, well, that's not what it was at all, it was this. Whereas right, they don't get to do that in True Blood because we're only seeing Eric's point of view. It's kind of like, all
right,
and I right, guess he's mad,
right? Because that mainly what you're talking about is Stefan and Damon disagree totally about stuff that happened back in the day.
Disagree, yes, very much about why they're in the situation they're in.
Right. All right.
Yeah, it's a great show. I could talk about this for hours.
I know. I'm like, and we have been. So we're gonna move on really quickly to Fringe.
Fringe. So yeah, it looks like you were right. It looks like what they're basically doing is they're alternating. Does it have, now do you know this for sure, or is it? It looks like they're basically doing every other episode is different world.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Is it's every other episode they switch back and forth, alternate our universe, alternate our universe.
And it's been good. And I gotta say, and I want to hear Olivia's take on this. And I know you heard on the premiere, you have never been a huge fan of Anna Torv. You've always thought she's pretty bland, and she was your main problem with Fringe because you like John Noble as Walter, you like Joshua Jackson as Peter, but you're always like, ugh, Anna Torv's so bland. I gotta say, this season, I think she's pretty good as the alternate, you know, Olivia Dunham.
Well, I mean, it adds a level of danger to it. There's like this extra level, especially when you're in our universe and you're dealing with the faux Olivia, you don't know what she's gonna do. You don't know if she's going to hurt them. You don't know, like, what the heck. You don't know anything about her actions.
Well, last week's episode, she killed that guy. Normally, they don't usually do that. Remember, there's the guy who was deaf, right?
Right, and she kills him, and she's hiding the body, right.
Right. And she's like, sorry, boom. You're like, whoa.
Well,
like,
and because they did that, they let us know that she is willing to kill people. And you don't know who she, like, if any of the characters that we like, if they happen to get in her way, she's going to kill them. So that adds a level of danger to her, which is interesting. And then in the alternate universe, you have our Olivia, but she's struggling with the memories of the other Olivia plus her own memories, and she doesn't really know what's true and what's not. And that makes her interesting. My main problem.
In this episode, she started seeing Peter and Walter.
Right. Right.
Which is great. Yeah. And that was fantastic. In this week's episode, basically they're dealing with, Fringe and Supernatural are both very guilty of ripping off the X-Files over and over again. So this episode, they basically have a character who can, basically he's like the Bookman thing, right? He knows exactly what's going to happen. So that
he doesn't know what's going to happen. He does math.
Well, he manipulates it because he sees all the possible
outcomes. Yeah, it's all based on probability. He can just do calculations faster and better than a computer. So he doesn't see the future. He just is predicting the outcome based on...
But what was cool was that, so there's a big chase between him, the real Olivia, who thinks she's the fake Olivia, and then that, and then her partner, who's dead in the real world, but he's... This sounds so convoluted when you say it this way. But but so there's a big chase, and in the alternate world, when you're in the city and you're in certain areas, you're supposed to use an inhaler. I guess it's like a bad oxygen area or whatever.
Right.
So, of course, the guy figures out, like, okay, well, if I run to this area, Olivia's going to chase me, but because it's a bad breathing area, she's going to stop to use her breath, and that's when she's going to get killed. However, because it is the real Olivia who doesn't have that information, she doesn't do that. And that's how it breaks the out. Because I was like, how are they going to do this? If this guy knows everything you're going to do, because he knows all the probability, how could you fool him? And it's like, oh, well, you can fool him because she's a person who doesn't have that common sense knowledge, which is what a lot of his information is based on.
Right. And
that was great.
Yeah, that was pretty good. And the thing is she does have the information because she has the false memories, but it's not instinct to her. So
Right. So if you ask her, right, in the episode, he's like, we're at Coney Island, and you threw up on that ride. She has that memory. So she can go, no, you're fooling me. It was you who threw up. But you're right. It's the instinct, which is if you see something, you know exactly what you're supposed to do. And she doesn't have that.
Right. Which was all that pretty was good. Yeah. This was a really pretty good episode. I have to say, Fringe has been knocking it out of the box this season. Every episode has been really good. They've had three so far, and I'd say all three of them are A's.
Yeah. In fact, I feel like Fringe is entering its supernatural phase where you almost wish that I think you could take season 1 and 2 of Fringe, you could take out all the bad episodes, and you basically have a really solid first season.
Right.
Because basically, it's all been about getting to the new season, which is about the alternate reality.
No.
This should have been the second season. But I mean, whatever, I'm happy we're here now. So.
Right.
I should have given it more of a chance, because I kind of stopped watching after the first 5 episodes, because I guess I was getting really annoyed by... Okay. Don't get me wrong. I love John Noble as an actor, but his character was getting on my nerves.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
I could see that, but I really like him, but I can understand.
Well, I was with you. Like, I watched the 2-hour pilot, and I thought it was trash, and I totally never watched it again for 2 years, something like that.
Yeah, it was a while.
And then everybody again started talking about, oh, you got to wait till the story kicks in, because... Everything, because I was like, I've seen The X-Files. I don't need to see a bad remake of The X-Files,
yeah,
which is
what
it looked
what I
like.
Felt.
Right, that's what it looks like. But the whole concept of the alternate realities is what makes it different. Once they introduce the alternate realities and you start understanding how that... Basically, the alternate realities is what's causing some of the X-File-like events.
Oh, okay, I didn't even get to that point.
Right, like, exactly. I know, and that's the thing. Is they took too long to introduce the idea of the alternate realities. Once they introduce that, then it starts to get interesting. And the problem with first season is I think we got like 5 or 6 alternate reality episodes. And then season 2, we got maybe 8 or 9 alternate reality episodes. And so the problem was those episodes were really, really good, like all A's. But then you had to deal with the standalone episodes, which were just bad X-File ripoffs, which were like C's. So the show was very hot and cold.
Do you think this alternate reality thing is the direction that they were intending on heading?
Yeah, they very much said that. What happened was there was a writer that they added to the writing staff, and he came into the season after they'd done the pilot. They'd done like about 6 or 7 episodes, and he comes on board and he's like, oh, your idea is this alternate reality thing. They're like, oh, he's like, so when are you going to introduce that? And they were like, oh, maybe the finale of season 1. And he goes, no, you need to introduce that. Because he was like, you will be canceled before then. He was like, you need to introduce this much earlier, bring it in, you got to get the interest flowing. And so he got them to move that up and move that storyline timetable up, which I think saved the show. Because without that,
I mean, I still think, honestly, if you take season 1 and 2, if you were to have the revelation about Peter and stuff at the halfway point, and then you deal with, you know, all that kind of stuff, like, it really would have made a much tighter season.
Oh, yeah. It definitely.
I mean, it would have been like, it would have been great. It would have been like, oh, this is fantastic, you know? And I'll also say that what they're doing now in this season, like we just said, she saw Walter and she sees Peter. We haven't seen that kind of thing since the first season, and honestly, it wasn't really that great in the first season, but if it was compressed, it would have been stronger, because we'd be like, oh, because remember in the first season, in fact, Amy, you might even know this, like, was it her old partner, ex-lover, or something
like
that?
Yeah, her boyfriend, yeah.
Yeah, and then...
Right, she sees the memory of him, and it was kind of a cool idea, but again, it was scattered with all these really lame episodes, but now, that same way of thinking is back, and it makes sense, but I did have to think to myself, oh yeah, that was early on in the first season, whereas if it was a tighter, if they had moved all this stuff up, it would be pretty good. It'd be like, oh wow, that's pretty cool, you know, so... Yeah, no, I would agree. So far, this is the best season of Fringe.
Yeah,
like, I mean,
they are really, especially just alternating, because before we would get a little piece of the alternate reality every like 5 or 6 episodes. We get one little hint.
But I do like alternate reality stories.
Oh, this is fantastic. This story is
really great.
Good.
Yeah, they do really good. Like in this episode, was this the one where she's looking at the pop culture book?
Right. No, that was last week's.
I'm sorry, I watched them back to back, but yeah,
right.
Because there's little difference. Oh, wait, was this the episode though where they don't have pens in the alternate world?
Right, they don't have pens, right, because...
or they're outmoded. They have them, but barely anybody uses them.
Because everyone in the alternate universe is about 20 or 30 years ahead technologically.
Oh, cool.
So all their computer systems are way more advanced. Everybody uses like this whole touch screen thing, and the only people who use pen and paper anymore are people who are in mental hospitals.
Wow, that's cool.
Right, because their brains can't have a hard time with the touch screen.
Oh, right.
Wow.
Which, by the way, had a nice moment. Like to see beret wearing Astrid. Touch screen genius that she is. I was like, what's going on in this world? Like,
Astrid is awesome in the alternate reality. I think she's really cool. All right, let's go on to the last show we have for us, which is Supernatural.
Yes. Why don't you go first, and I'll come in.
Okay. Supernatural this week was really good. It was called The Third Man, and it was the reintroduction of Castiel, who is awesome. And what was, of course, one of the highlights was the whole Sam was like, I've been calling Castiel for a year, and he hasn't responded to my prayers, and there's no way that he's going to respond to yours. You can do it. And then I love Dean's version of his prayer to Castiel. It's like, get your feathery butt down here. And
yeah, that was pretty good.
And then the next thing you know, Castiel's standing there. And Sam was like, what? I've been praying to you all year, and you now come because he calls you once? And he's like, me and Dean have a very special bond. And I was and everyone goes nuts. That was all really good. And I like the whole Civil War in Heaven thing that's going on.
I think that's pretty good, especially because they, once again, that was another thing they're bringing back, the character that they, who was the guy that they left in that Ring of Fire?
Oh, wasn't Uriel?
He's back now, and that was pretty good because you knew that was going to happen. I was like,
right.
Well, he's gonna out,
well
know?
Yeah,
so,
he had a vendetta.
So, yeah.
Yeah, he had a vendetta against Castiel. He was like, if you leave me in this Ring of Fire, I will come and I will find you, and it will not be pleasant. And that dude's an Right, and that dude's an archangel, and Castiel's not. So
right, archangels for Amy, archangels are pretty powerful.
Yeah, archangel versus regular angel. Regular angel gets his butt kicked
in the Supernatural universe.
Yes.
They're like the elite soldier, basically.
Right. And the only thing I don't like is they killed the actor who was playing that angel. I like that actor because he's from the unit. And so now they're like, oh, he's going to have to get another meat suit. And I was like, oh, man. So that means we're going to have another actor playing that angel.
Yeah, I do think that, too. That's a tricky thing with that show is, like, are they dead? And if they're not dead, you know, why is Castiel still in the same body? Didn't he get destroyed?
He got killed like twice. Yes.
What's with him? Although, actually, no, they did bring it up because remember that he's like, I need your blood. And he's like, well, can't you use your own blood? And he's like, I can't. So technically, maybe it's more like he's wearing the illusion of the old body.
No, I don't think so. No, they very much said that God brought him back twice. He got blown up one time by an archangel. And God brought him back. Then he got blown up again by Lucifer, and then God brought him back. So
okay,
apparently,
but then why can't he use his blood?
Oh, maybe an angel inside a vessel then makes you not. Because if you think about it, he can take bullets and he can take a lot of damage and he's fine.
I have a few friends that are really, really into this show, and I'm so sorry that I'm behind on it. Brian's been trying to encourage me. Come on.
Brian is the supernatural crack dealer.
He loves it.
Yeah, so he loves the show. He got, like, I think I'm the only one. I was watching Supernatural before him. I take pride in that fact. He is super crazy about it, but I was watching it before he was.
I think Supernatural, for me, I just had to do the crash course where I finally started burning through I would say season 3, 4, and 5, like, I went through those, for me especially. Libby had watched the television way faster, but even you have to admit, Libby, I did go through those pretty fast.
Yeah, that's those seasons were really good.
Those seasons, they're pretty good. It's just, yeah, those first couple of seasons, like, it's a little shaky.
Yeah, I was watching Supernatural just because it was on and it was a Supernatural show for the first couple seasons. But once I got to the whole war in heaven and the archangels and all of that stuff, I was in. I was like, this is fantastic.
Yeah, that's all really good. I really dug. It was just getting them to that point. I will say, though, you were saying your concern. They showed the trailer for next week's Supernatural. And...
Well, actually, it wasn't next week. It was for the rest of the season.
But I will say, the only thing I'm worried about with Supernatural is just because I feel like they've delved into the I can't trust Sam well a lot. And so it looked like from what
we're
showing,
you're not talking about Samuel. You're talking about Sam and then a well. Let's be clear.
Right. The Sam is in a wishing well. The well.
Okay. Well, because there's a character, you know, there's now Samuel that's on the show.
Oh, no, they're right. You're right. No, I meant Sam, and Dean. Because they showed the clip where he's like, can I trust you? And it looks like in some episode, it looks like Dean's going to have something where he can basically ask you a question and you have to tell the truth. Is that what
right,
it is?
Right.
Which looks good. That looked good. But I was just like, you know, there's only so much we can do with the I can't trust my brother because he's a demon or something like that.
Well,
like,
the thing is, I think the big deal is something has happened to Sam. And so now Sam is not Sam. Excuse me. So we have to now figure out what's going on with him, and this is our long trail. This is like one of those situations where on Vampire Diaries we would know within 3 episodes, but right. Supernatural is going to take episode. I think we're going to get to like episode 10 before they tell us what it is.
I think you're right.
But at least they won't take the whole season. But
I think you're right. I think it sounds like a mid-season thing. I think
right.
But I would say I really didn't like the premiere of Supernatural this season. I really felt like it was just hard for me to get over the fact that I'm just like, I don't really know how much more, because Amy, if you do watch it, the first, especially 3, 4, and 5, it's all kind of conceived as one idea. And so, you know, Rob Kripke, who is the creator and showrunner, he left this season. I'm not really sure what the point of this season is. But I will say, it's been getting better. Yes. Like, I would say the first episode I was kind of eh, and then the next one was better, and then I liked this one. So it's been getting back into my groove of Supernatural.
Yay! And on that note, I need to bring this podcast to a close because we've been going too long.
All right.
All right, so if you guys have any feedback, remember to send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @tvcampfire. And also we're on Facebook. And
like us and follow us.
Yeah.
And tell your friends.
Tell a friend, yeah. All right, talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.